Hey, Fixing Fantasy fans, it's Tom. We had really great time, Andy and I, interviewing Nick Perks for this episode. It was a steep learning curve for me, not knowing much about trusts and foundations fundraising, but I want to give a big shout out to the fundraising chat community who had some great questions that we put to Nick. To give a little context about Nick, he's a freelance consultant now, so he offers lots of support to charities, foundations, and philanthropists around mission and strategy. He was the CEO formerly of the Joseph Rowntree Charitable Trust, I'm sure a name that rings a bell, and he has served on boards of other organizations as well. Nick principally nowadays is responsible for bringing Grant Advisor to the UK, so that's the platform for fundraisers and charities can post anonymous reviews for trusts and foundations, and that's the kind of meat of what we talked about today, the fantastic platform that Nick's been behind, and posing some interesting questions to him as someone who's worked on the foundation side of grant making. So I hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. And as always, reach out to us if you have any questions about the content, or get in touch with Nick directly. If you listen to the end, you can get his contact details and where you can find him online. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Fixing Fundraising. Today's episode is one that I'm really excited about. We're joined by Nick Perks talking about trust fundraising and in particular the behavior of the grant givers. Nick, do you want to say hi?
Hi, great to be on here.
Awesome. So did you want to start us off for 10?
Yeah, sure. So, thanks for the invitation to Fixing Fundraising. And I'm kind of something of an interloper here because I've spent almost all my career on the grant giving side of the funding relationship. Mm. What I've become particularly interested in is the kind of, obviously there's some things work well in that relationship, but there's some things that are quite dysfunctional. And in general, I think funders know what fundraisers want, you know, things like clear guidance on what they fund and straightforward application processes and so on, obviously core unrestricted funding.
Yeah.
But there's kind of two big problems. One is there's almost no external pressure on funders to do their job well.
Yeah.
So they know what fundraisers want, but if they don't deliver that, then there's almost no comeback.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that even the funders who are kind of broadly doing the right things and broadly providing a good service don't get very much feedback on the detail of what they do. So they could have generally a great approach, but have, I don't know, a really annoying online portal which they don't apply through.
Which seems to be the case for many, it seems.
A common experience, yeah. Or, you know, the portal might work generally well, but there might be one bit of it which is really annoying. And, you know, if you're a fundraiser and you're maybe, you know, calling into a funder and discussing an application, you're not going to suddenly say, oh, by the way, this is a really annoying thing on your system. So funders don't get the feedback that they need either on those big issues or on the detail. And so I'm really interested in how we can change that. So maybe talk about some of the issues that come up. And you've got some great examples from people you surveyed. And I also want to give a plug for a platform called Grant Advisor, which is precisely trying to change that power dynamic and that feedback breakdown.
Cool. Yeah, as you said, I think it's a really interesting topic. And when we did survey some trust fundraisers, we put a post up on Fundraising Chat being like, I wonder what issues trust fundraisers have with grant applications. And oh, a few. And as you say, they can be overarchingly not serving their purpose, from making you crowbar your financial information into a set format whilst also having to upload your budget separately, to more minor issues of having to put your answer in a text box that has a different word count system to Microsoft Word, meaning that you spend ages crafting your 500 word answer to be told it's 650, even though you can see in Word that it's 500. So
I can feel your anger. It's palpable.
So there is quite a lot there. And you're right. So you've got the Grant Advisor platform. And is that a way of fundraisers anonymously giving that feedback to funders? Because I think a huge hesitation that fundraisers have in giving that feedback is the fear that it will damage their relationship.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's exactly the idea behind the platform. So it works as entirely anonymous feedback from fundraisers on the performance foundations, and started in the US where it actually covers all US foundations, so you can complain or praise about whoever you want. We're just piloting it in the UK at the moment, so there's 15 funders up there, including some very well-known names like Esme Fairbairn and Paul Hanlon. And the idea is fundraisers can go on there, and they're kind of a short set of questions which have been designed by fundraisers, not by funders. So it's the things that matters to fundraisers. Smiley faces to click and a free text box to comment on, kind of around things like accessibility and how long does an application take, and what would you recommend the funder improved, those sort of questions. And it's really got two purposes, actually. So one is peer feedback for other fundraisers. So, if there is a problem with a trust, or if there's a kind of good tip there, or if the funder's really helpful, if you phone them up, even though their website is rubbish, that's the kind of information that fundraisers can share with each other. So there's sort of peer learning going on. So there's one purpose to it. And then the other purpose to it is hopefully to give a bit of kind of honest, unmediated feedback to funders. And again, both on this kind of broad, are they kind of doing the right thing and having the right kind of approach, but also the detail of what's it like from the other end, and what's the actual experience of users, which, having worked on the grant giving side of the fence for most of my career, I know you just rarely, rarely get that.
And how this is kind of a question coming from me, Nick. I guess my ignorance of this world. I'm very new to this stuff. I've always been a community fundraiser, and I find it fascinating that so much of it is, for lack of a better word, behind the times. And actually, what GrantAdvisor is doing is obviously bringing it into the modern world. As someone coming from like the world of like trusts and foundations, have you found there's been any kind of resistance from people? Like, are their processes kind of sacred to them, or what's the response been?
That's a really interesting question, and I think there's quite a mix. I mean, trusts and foundations are kind of as varied as charities. Mm-hmm. So they go in terms of size. There's everything from sort of, the Wellcome Trust and Comic Relief and, large professional staff and so on, right down to, lots of small or historical local foundations, which, maybe have half a staff member, if even that, might have an entirely voluntary setup. Mm. So there's a big range there, and there's a big range of culture as well. So, some foundations that are very interested in sharing power or getting feedback, and others for whom that is not really their cup of tea. And I've had in kind of talking to trust and foundations about Grant Advisor, I've had the full range from trust and foundations get very excited about it and think, oh, that's really innovative. We really want to be part of that.
Yeah.
I think the worst response I got was, and I won't name any names, but if you kind of imagine, your sort of classic older lawyer trustee, who after I presented this idea of Grant Advisor in a forum of funders, said to me in the break, he said he thought it was irrelevant and disgusting.
Wow.
Which I thought was a great combination of insults. So, yeah, it's not universally popular, but then...
If listeners want to try and tweet guess who that was, that'd be great. But wow, that's something.
Yeah. That's as far as he was concerned, this was private money, and so it was beyond criticism.
Yeah.
But I have to say that is one extreme end of the spectrum, and there are definitely funders who are quite excited by the potential of getting slightly less, mediated feedback and actually finding what their users are experiencing.
When you've been running the platform,
yeah.
Are there common complaints that have been coming up? Because when we posted on Fundraising Chat, there was actually some fairly consistent feedback. Have you found that consistency on the platform too, or not?
Yeah, so I think there's actually more praise than criticism, though there definitely is some criticism. I think there's partly a bit of an effect. We're just running as a pilot with 15 foundations who have opted in. So in a way, you know, it's a slightly more go-ahead in the modern world foundations who have chosen to do that.
Okay.
But I think, you know, there are some interesting things around, accessibility, for example. So people saying, so for some of the funders, you know, it's really helpful if you can talk to them, but actually it's quite difficult to get a response because the staff are very busy. There's also kind of misconceptions that arise. So there's the potential for dialogue on the platform. So although the reviews are completely anonymous, the funder can, you know, a bit like TripAdvisor or whatever, the hotel can post back and respond to comments.
Mm.
So we had a really interesting one with Esme Fairbairn where an applicant said, oh, you know, even if you get to the second stage, there's only a 10% chance of success.
Mm.
And Esme were able to say, well, actually, this is the data, you know, actually 85% of people get through. So there's a possibility for dialogue and corrections of errors as well. But I'm going slightly off your point about common themes. I think the relationship comes across really, it's obviously really important for people.
Yeah.
And so there's quite a lot of comments of, you know, I got to talk to someone and that was really useful.
Yeah.
But then also comments of, it's actually quite difficult to get access or, you know, they're helpful if you can get through, but you can't always get through.
That makes sense. I think one of the conversations I see happening in the trust fundraising circles a lot is whether to call or not.
Mm-hmm.
And how when you can call and when that call gets answered, it's often super, super helpful.
Yeah.
But there can often be resistance from both sides.
Yeah.
On that. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
That's really interesting. Why is there an argument for not calling? I mean, I can see if a funder's saying, you know, we can't take calls, then it's going to be quite annoying if you call. But ones that do accept calls, is there an argument for not calling?
Not strong ones, beyond introversion, I would say. but there's hesitance around it from worrying about annoying them, etc.
Yeah.
I think, but I wouldn't say they're strong arguments that I'd see, but
yeah.
Possibly I could be wrong. So yeah, with being on the grant giving side, do you have any response to some of the common issues that people are facing? One of the ones that I found the most interesting, and it possibly came up the most, was about the presentation of financial information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how loads of funders will ask you to put your budget in their format and also ask you for your own budget in your own format. And so there's a real sense of like just shoehorning it in the right way.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, so I mean, of the various themes that came up in the comments, and I would get a chance to talk about a few of the others, but on that one, I've sort of got a bit of sympathy for both sides, I think. So in the Funder Jones Ranch Charitable Trust that I work for most recently, we didn't have a template for financial information, you know, once people's published accounts, but then a budget for the work they were planning or the organisation as a whole, if it was a core grant. But we did have some internal conversations about whether we should have a template, because you do get a massive variety of different presentations of financial information. And I suppose where we felt it worked well was quite often in a sort of smaller organisation, the person applying was probably quite on top of the finances or sitting next to the person who was on top of the finances. And, you know, so could present quite a simple budget of, you know, this is what we want to do and this is how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
I think where it tended to get more problematic was when, you know, if it was a university or just a very large NGO, and people, you know, obviously written off to their finance people and said, oh, I need a budget here. And then you get some massive spreadsheet, yeah. Which actually, you know, you weren't quite sure the applicant understood, and you certainly didn't. So I can see the temptation for saying, well, we want it set out under these particular headings so that we can do this consistently across all our grants and, you know, put together statistics about how much we're spending on different issues and so on. But I'm a massive fan of keep the format as simple, and in this case, to me, that use the budget format that the applicant has. Equally on the narrative content, I think, you know, there's some complaints about, you know, very prescriptive or questions or questions that repeat almost the same thing in different times. And that seems to me quite a waste of everybody's time. Whereas if you're saying, you know, give us 4 pages or give us 2 pages or give us a one side concept note, but then people can, you know, cut and paste text write in the way that they want to write and use the voice they want to use rather than trying to fit into boxes.
Yeah, for sure. I think on the financial information side, I totally understand where you're coming from. And one of the things I think would be amazing, but possibly unlikely/impossible, would be for all funders or grant makers to agree to use the same template, because then you'd only have to do it once across a group of applications.
I can hear the footsteps of the common application form monster coming.
That's the difficulty that you don't want that, though, do you? So that makes sense. But and again, the difficulty of having the variety of trusts and grant makers that we have and the level of skill of the people making those application forms is that sometimes they do ask the same question 5 times in different wording and don't even realize that they're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is why they need to be told, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, comes to the dilemma of, well, who's going to tell them?
In the American version of Grant Advisors, where it's kind of a all grant maker wide,
yeah.
How did that upscale or conversion from a select few to everyone go?
So, I mean, I think they essentially started with everyone. The only reason for starting it with a smaller group here was partly because we didn't have any money, so what can we do within a little bit of resources? And also there were some technical questions about, so you need a data set of all the grant makers, essentially, so that the site can pick up the right, you know, the right. Individual organisations. So that's just a chunk more work. But the US one is well worth a scan because, again, there's a balance of positive comments. I think they have about 2/3 positive to 1/3 negative over the whole site. But there are also some shockingly bad practice that's being exposed. So there were posts which sort of say, you know, don't touch this funder, you know, they're only there to promote their corporate parent and they're going to give you the runaround. Or, this funder used to be brilliant, but their new program on education in our state is a disaster because it's badly designed so there is some quite strong stuff on there. I think, you know, funders will sit up and take notice when they get that kind of feedback.
That makes a lot of sense. When you're looking at the positive comments, is there any consistently positive things that you see?
We do know what fundraisers want, don't we? So I think the a good relationship, responsiveness, proportionality is a really key thing. And often it does feel like when people get away from an online portal and talk to a human being, they have a good experience. And I think that's encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess one of the things we noticed in the comments, Nick, was that so a lot of the feedback was around trusts and foundations only looking to fund new projects, and that kind of dichotomy almost of they only want to fund new projects, but they want those projects to be self-sustaining within a year.
Yeah.
And how would you address that? Do you have any kind of like practical tips that would help trust funders combat that?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I have complete sympathy with the trust fundraisers on this one. I think funders just kind of need to be a bit more humble, to be honest. Most funders are only contributing probably a relatively small proportion of a charity's income. You're not going to get, huge systemic change or kind of massive success on, relatively small grants. I mean, obviously there are some funders that are large enough that they can be, making really substantial contributions. But I think there just needs to be a bit more degree of humility by funders that, they're making a contribution. And there are specific instances where maybe a particular investment might allow a new piece of work to get off the ground, and there's a potential for an earned income stream later down the road, or there's an investment in fundraising infrastructure which will then allow a charity to expand its kind of membership, so there are specific instances, but generally, charities need resources to do the stuff that they want to do, and what trust can provide is some of those resources, but it isn't always going to be the exciting stuff. I think a lot of energy is wasted on both sides by, kind of restrict either, to very short periods or very discrete projects. And generally there's a lot more mileage in unrestricted funding and longer multi-year funding, but it kind of needs a bit of letting go by the funders. What can trust fundraisers do about that? I mean, I guess, it's maybe picking and choosing, what you are going to apply for and who you are going to apply for. And I suppose one comment that maybe people will not like.
Here we go.
I can't throw things at me because I'm on the phone. But, when I was at JST, one of the interesting things was, we very explicitly said where it's a registered charity and where all of the work fits within our, broad areas of interest, which were quite broad. We really like core or unrestricted applications. And we got fewer than you would think. So, and I definitely had conversations with people who, I was saying, well, why are you applying for a project? Mm. You can come to us for unrestricted funding. And I think because, and it's ultimately it's funders' fault, because funders have driven that, we want an impact and we want to be able to see how our money makes a difference and all of those things. But then kind of the sector colludes in that, so that we both pretend that, this grant is making this particular change kind of somehow free from, the human resources and the paying the electricity bill and all the other things that have to happen. And so I think maybe some trust fundraisers, also then get kind of a bit stuck in that mindset of, well, everything does have to be a project, even if there are funders out there who say they will fund core costs. And I suppose the other thing I would say is, these things do go a bit in waves. And I think it's always, in all my, 20 years in the sector or whatever, the narrative has been, oh, you can't get core costs the way you used to be able to get core costs. And there's some truth in that, I think, particularly, local authority grants that, don't exist anymore and so on. Mm. But actually in fashions in philanthropy, I think there was a period when it was very much a sort of shift towards a kind of more venture philanthropy model and a kind of very interventionist funder model. And actually the pendulum's gone back the other way. And I think a lot of funders, Esme, Lloyd's TSB, are making statements about more core funding and trusting charities more. So I think there may be a little bit of recalibration going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's what it kind of boils down to almost, is trust. Is it once you've shifted the culture one way, as funders have, then the issue comes down to almost the kind of two-sided coin of transparency on one side. Charities see trust and foundations as opaque and don't know what's going on, and then funders look at charities and go, we don't trust you to not, you know, to not actually do what you say you're going to do. Whereas actually the kind of the flip side of that argument is if they funded core costs, they could almost take credit for more impact.
Absolutely.
In theory,
they
could take credit for the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all sorts of, I mean, I'm a terrible fundraiser, but from the other side, you know, confidence comes across well. And so I think, you know, where charities are saying, you know, we've got a story to tell, not just about, you know, we'll deliver this, you know, particular set of activities over a short period, but we've got a vision for, you know, delivering a great service on this issue, or, you know, winning a certain campaign over a period of time, and we want you to back us wholeheartedly as an organisation. Now, I'm not saying that's always going to come off, but I think that is quite an attractive story to tell, and I think funders do buy into the vision. Not just into, you know, kind of deliverables. So I know it's really difficult, and I know there are lots of funders who just have blanket bans on, you know, these are things we won't fund. But I would encourage trust fundraisers wherever possible to be pushing that envelope, and also, you know, giving those messages to funders, not just in the general abstract, but, you know, specifically, and, you know, obviously Grant Advisors a platform through which they can do that.
I really like what you just said about pushing the envelope and getting that support, because it's almost moving the relationship from a funder fundee to an actual partnership.
Where
the support is based on core cost and there's more conversation about overarching strategy, actually both sides are likely to find it more fulfilling. But you do need to have that confidence to go for it.
Yeah.
But there's an element of what have you got to lose at the same time. Nice.
Excellent.
Should we cut part one there?
Okay, we've come to that point where it's question time.
Ooh.
And there is the jingle.
There is every time.
It's a new jingle every time, but there we go.
Rude.
So, Nick, I guess the first question, you've already, I guess you've kind of already stolen your own thunder, because the first question is, is there a resource, a book or blog, or maybe even a website that you might recommend that can help people in their kind of day to day?
Yeah, well, this is obviously where I plug Grant Advisors a bit more. I haven't said before, but it's an entirely free platform as well as an anonymous platform. So you literally can go on there, you know, vent what you need to vent or praise what you need to praise. And you know, you can do that without fear or favour or worry about comeback. And we've got about 150 reviews on there so far, and we want more because we, you know, obviously the more data we have, the more we can kind of see how it's working, and we've obviously got to build the case for why this, you should be able to review any funder in the UK, and that's going to take a bit of resources. So, but it will remain completely free to you. So please do go on there and post a review. That would be lovely.
Fantastic.
Nice. Are there any funders or any fundraisers that you see that are particularly smashing it out of the park in terms of really building those relationships and making it as productive for both sides as possible?
So I think this conversation, there are other people having it as well. I thought, you know, the Institute of Fundraising has just had their Trust Fundraising Conference, and there was some, which I think you were at, and I thought that, you know, the Harriet Stranks blog from Lloyds Bank Foundation and David Burgess, you know, experimenting from what it's like to be on the other side of the fence. I thought those were a great read, and I think, you know, that honest conversation about perspectives, I think, is going on in other places. I think, you know, there are funders I've mentioned, Esme and Lloyds Bank before. I think the Cora Foundation in Scotland as well. The Devon Community Foundation has been one of the most active on the Grant Advisor site. I think there are a number of people who are really wanting the feedback now and are wanting to change that dynamic. So, there's, of course, a long way to go and room for improvement.
Nice. Sad.
If there was a thing you could unthink from the world of fundraising, we're not if it were? I wish no one had ever thought of that. What would it be and why?
So for me, and I know this strikes the heart of some fundraising strategies, but for me, it's the your £10 can save a life kind of frame.
Juicy.
I just think it dumbs down the world's problems, like, you know, as if your £10 note could kind of immediately be transmitted to Syria or Afghanistan or wherever it is and buy one blanket, which would then save a child's life. And, you know, of course, we all emotionally want to do that. It's not really quite how the world works. So I think that's the thing for me in fundraising. Yeah, of course, we got to tell stories. Of course, we need personal examples. Of course, people want to have a sense that they're making a difference. It's not just, you know, their money's just not going astray. But I think we need to be honest that actually, if you could do all those amazing things with just the £10, then the world would be solved already.
Oh, that's a good one. We could do a whole episode on that question, I'm sure.
Nice.
There'll be letters.
And last but not least, certainly not least, Nick, what is your favourite joke?
This is definitely the toughest question. So I've been, you know how your mind goes blank.
Yeah.
So Grant Advisor has a little penguin as a mascot.
Mm.
So I thought I'd do a penguin-related joke.
Nice.
Excellent.
Here we go.
So a woman goes into a cinema and she's just settling down for the film. And then she realizes, to her astonishment, that there's a penguin in the seat next to her. My God, she says, a penguin. The penguin turns to her and says, yeah, what of it? And the woman says, well, what on earth are you doing here? And the penguin says, well, I like the book.
Oh, God.
It worked.
I'm seeing that.
That's good. Nice. That's good.
Nick, thank you so much for coming on. I think it's a really interesting topic to go through, and I'm sure a lot of people will find it super interesting. If people want to find more of you, not to hunt you down because their £5 hasn't bought a mosquito net, but because they want to hear more of what you're saying, where can they go?
Okay, so they can find me personally at nickperks.org.uk and also on Twitter at @nick_perks_. There's not many Perkses around, so you'll find me. And if they want to find Grant Advisor, the UK site is at grantadvisor.org.uk, also has a Twitter feed, and the US site is the same, but without the UK on the end.
Great. Thank you so much, Nick.
Great. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for all your interesting questions.